Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Each week, Brenda brings you timely topics in art, culture, and film. Her guests are change agents, business leaders, authors, people who will inspire you. Join Brenda on Fridays at noon Central or listen to her podcast on demand 24/7. Please visit and like facebook.com/alive to thrive. And now, here's Brenda.
My name is Brenda Fraser, and that was a selection from a song called Circle of Life by Kenny David Fine, my guest today. I'm so excited he is with us. He's been traveling across the country, originally from this area, then Texas, now Colorado, my former beloved home of Colorado. And he performs all over the country, bringing his musical messages about love and life, but as well as teaching about nutritional health. And he's just an amazing guy. He's got so many talents. He's more like five people rolled up into one. And he's just operates on a higher level than most of us can even comprehend. So welcome to the show, Kenny. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for that very kind introduction.
Oh, well, there's so much I could have said, but tried to keep it short there. And do want to make sure people, if you're listening over the phone, you can go to his website and listen while looking at his site, which is Kenny Davin, D-A-V-I-N, Fine, F-I-N-E.com. So why don't we start? I always like to start at the beginning. So you're originally from St. Louis, is that correct, or did you live here at
that
one point?
Yep. No, I've lived here my first 17 years. Born and until I went to medical school out of high school, and unfortunately my medical career led me to Texas from there, so that was in Kansas City. So haven't been here since 1980 as a resident, but was born here.
Oh my goodness. So do you have early memories of St. Louis that influenced you in a positive way? Did you go to any of the museums or the zoo or any early memories?
You know, ironically enough, I don't know why this is true, but St. Louis has this reputation, at least as you're growing up, for people always asking where you went to high school. I don't know if that's a cliche or if that was just something I heard about.
Right.
So, you know, you meet somebody, oh, you're from St. Louis, where'd you go to high school? Now, truthfully to me, that just seems like a normal thing to ask. And so my fondest memories of my friends and the city are the fact that I lived here until high school, and I have kept very many close relationships with people still here. Sometimes I even go as far as doing grade school and high school reunions because I believe in the power of love and friendship. But, so let's just say that all of my beloved tribe is mostly from this area.
Well, that's awesome. And so that song, Circle of Life, is like that. You've gathered people in your circle of life, and you've kept them there, and you know, you've built on that. A lot of times, I find, I grew up in New England, people, probably 80% of the people stay in their hometown and don't leave. But you did leave, and you went off to medical school. And did anything strike you as unusual in your medical training, I mean, in terms of alternative health, or did that come later?
Well, truthfully, I don't even consider what I do alternative health. I feel like I call it the higher truth of health. But and I know I'm going to get ahead of you and ourselves, but
that's
let's
okay.
just say that the expertise that came to me through my medical research involving gluten sensitivity, which is what I'm most famous for in the public realm medically, I have been interested in nutrition and intestinal health issues really since I was a young medical student. And so it's kind of shown me both the fact that I knew about this gluten sensitivity epidemic about 15 years before it became popular, which was because of my research and because of my spiritual nature. You know, there's a New Testament phrase, ask and you shall receive. And the truth is that the higher truths of everything are available to us all if we just kind of open our minds, and it's kind of like reaching on a higher shelf. You can't find anything on a higher shelf if you don't even know there's a higher shelf. So once you know there's a higher shelf and you start reaching for it, hey, what's up here? Then, you know, paths start opening and synchronicities start happening, and especially if you pray and ask for the things that you desire. The thing I tell people is, you know, the only thing that there's no guarantees on is how quickly these things will happen, but, you know, to never give up before the miracle. But the bottom line is that I seem to have been interested in the very field that would become my future, that would become my present now, you know, in the 1980s. And it does intrigue me how that intuition and maybe those synchronicities seem to have been active in my both medical and then later musical life from a young age.
And so in terms of the epidemic, as you call it, the gluten sensitivity, it's just prevalent. What, you know, was there something in the American diet that kind of triggered this, or, you know, because you never heard about it too much in the 60s or 70s when I was growing up. And what did you find in your research that was your aha moment?
Right. Well, so the aha moment regarding that it existed, and this occurred one night in my research office. I was a researcher in a hospital. I was on staff at two universities, and the main medical hospitals and universities in Dallas, Texas, Baylor University Medical Center and UT Southwestern Medical School. I had been on a line of research of a special colitis that my mentor actually discovered and reported. And, you know, I mean, how many doctors can say that they discovered a new disease in their career, and yet my mentor did. And the fact that this new form of colitis was described in 1980 or 79 or so, that itself indicates that maybe something new had started going on, you know, in the decades before that. So let's just say maybe since the 60s, probably let's say it took about 15 years for that to be discovered. That in itself implies that something had changed in the diet to induce a new form of colon disease. And the disease called celiac disease has been actually described for about 2,000 years. And that's the original disease that requires a certain form of diagnosis through intestinal biopsies and endoscopies and what have you, that's caused by gluten. They didn't know it was caused by gluten 2,000 years ago, but they certainly knew that it existed. And since about 1950 or so, gluten had been discovered as the cause. So let's just say from like 1950 to 1995, no one knew that gluten caused anything other than this very old described disease called celiac disease. Well, this form of colitis called microscopic colitis that I had been researching through the 90s via my mentor's original introduction to me, I was able to discover through my research that they had genetic similarities to celiac patients. They had epidemiologic similarities, like some people with both diseases would get arthritis and autoimmune problems. They were mostly female, so there were several clinical and histopathologic and genetic similarities, which I was able to go to the point of saying, I think these patients have a gluten problem, but I can't seem to prove that in the normal way that you detect that, which would be a blood test for antibodies to gluten. And so I got this idea to check inside the intestine, because that's where the food is and that's where your immune system would like to keep the reactions at bay. So when you're reacting to food, your immune system thinks you're reacting to a bacteria, and normally in your encounters with your intestine, the immune system's job is to keep that bacteria from getting in the body. So that antibodies are secreted into the intestine was the key. And so I had this idea that maybe we can't prove these patients are gluten sensitive because the reactions aren't in the blood, but they're in the intestine. So we tried looking at stool testing, which at first didn't reveal the answer, but with further modification. One night I'm in my office looking at the first set of data from that modified method, and suddenly 75% of the patients with colitis were found to be gluten sensitive according to the stool test. Well, that was impressive, but what was more impressive to me was that we had also done what you would call a normal control group, so people that were supposed to be healthy. And generally what you would expect to see in a comparison of patients to normal controls is that most of the patients with the disease have the problem detected, and that you would think almost none of the normal controls would be positive because they're normal. Well, 30% in that study turned out to have reactions to gluten in their stool of the normal people. And when I saw that, which would translate into about, 100 million people in the U.S. alone, I really felt like I just found something of major importance for public health. I could feel in my heart, literally, at that moment, that my life had just changed, that this is such a huge secret of sorts that I now know something no one else knows. And at that very moment, I felt a tap on my left shoulder, and I looked up kind of over my left shoulder, and I heard this kind of angelic voice, I guess is what it was, "You have to leave here." And that's how, that was literally the aha, being led out to, be the Paul Revere gluten sensitivity. Yeah. And so to answer your question about, why this is happening, So to first discover a test that can prove it only puts objective proof on something that had been written about in a growing way since like 1980, what we called gluten sensitivity without celiac disease. And there had already been about 5 publications up to that time that this was happening. But people didn't pay attention. And so not until like 2012 where the skeptical researchers repeated such a study with maybe a little bit more modern methods, and lo and behold, they found that what I had been saying at that point for 12 to 14 years was true, that you could have gluten sensitivity without celiac disease, and in fact, that's like 99% of the problem. And the reason this is happening, I say, in my analysis, is number one is that over the last 20, 30 years, we have been told by the USDA's dietary pyramid method to eat more grains and pasta, breads, almost like the carbs It was the era of low fat, which sadly made everybody fat. So low fat, high carb, we now discover is a way to get fat, but that's what the USDA's dietary recommendations were. So there was more gluten being eaten. The wheat itself has been hybridized over, you know, hundreds and thousands of years, which induces genetic modification naturally. And so gluten today has much more, wheat today has much more gluten in it. So we're eating more of it. There's more gluten per serving. And then there's other factors that are making our immune systems much more reactive to our environment than ever. Most of this is hormones and toxins in air and water that mimic hormones in our body. Even the disruption of our intestinal flora makes us more makes these reactions occur much more frequently in our. In other words, the good bacteria in our intestines keep the bad things in our intestinal tract from interacting with our immune system. So when you lose the protective flora, then the things in the intestine start causing more immune reactions, which is why, for example, inflammatory bowel diseases are also on the rise. And then there's a couple more. The two other factors, well, there's really three other factors on a show like this. It's okay to mention the third. The one factor is that there was an entire generation of people who were not breastfed because in the 50s, they came out with infant formula and mothers were told infant formula is better than breast milk. Now, that sounds ridiculous today, and I don't know if they really believed it or if it was just another corporate mentality overtaking nature. But, you know, so when people are not breastfed, they do not get the proper immune regulation to know which foods are friendly, which ones are unfriendly from an immune standpoint. And so that, I would say, is driving a portion of it in the adults today who weren't breastfed. And then we have an entire generation of people who use antacid medicines on a regular basis. Of course, gastroenterologists prescribe these so freely, almost like knocking out an important digestive secretory function of your stomach. It's not going to have any problem long term. But what that does is it blocks the protein digestion in your stomach to where you don't digest the dietary proteins as completely or at all. And then the less digestion you have of a protein, the more immune stimulating it is. So now that's another factor, and that's been shown in studies. And then the final thing, which I think is worth mentioning, is that it's my opinion that nutritionists and biochemists and doctors, we've been much too materialistic in our scientific thinking, almost like health and diet issues are all just like nuts and bolts, like protein, carbohydrate, fat. And we've totally ignored the personality or the energy or the life force of the plants we're growing and the attitudes that we're using in corporate agriculture. And so the bottom line is that if wheat used to be the bread of life, or bread, let's just say, is the bread of life, and it used to be grown, you know, on small farms and with no chemicals and with, you know, a holy intention, and now we just think it's just a commodity, well, then we've reduced the power and the goodness and the spiritual life force of our own food. And I believe that, you know, the genetic modification of other crops. Wheat itself has been genetically modified through hybridization, not through laboratory manipulation like corn or soy. But all of that, you know, it's almost like raising a child like you could just do that like a robot, and just what you expose the child to is what they'll respond to, rather than love, rather than intention, you know, rather than goodness. And so truthfully, at some metaphysical level, I believe what used to be the bread of life is now turning on us, and it's causing, you know, disease and bad health.
Wow. There's a lot there. There's a lot there. So, you know, what you mentioned about antacids, I've heard that probably from you or other people in small bits and pieces and in passing. So if we have listeners or, in my case, personal close friends that do pop antacids on a regular basis, what's the antidote? What should we tell them not to,
well,
to avoid that? And they say, well, I have a stomach ache. What should I, you know, what should they use instead?
Well, okay, so when I say antacid, I meant medications, the ones that block the secretion
okay.
of acid.
Okay, not over
I
the counter.
I think using an antacid is actually more preferable. It's more symptom relieving on an immediate basis. But really, the reason we have all of this, you know, and I tend to be a root cause type of thinker.
Right.
Like, why do we have so many people using stomach, you know, intestinal symptom causing disorders? And it's because our food is wrong. So not only do we make, you know, as a people, you know, with 70% of, you know, people overweight and not, you know, ideally fit, you know, we're obviously choosing the wrong food. We've created an entire generation or two of, you know, fast food and processed food eating people. And, for example, if you eat food and then suddenly get reflux, almost like there's a process trying to push what you just swallowed back up from where it came, there's, you know, if that's not direct, like overt, that's metaphysical. And what that means is this is not what I want. Your stomach is almost regurgitating what you just swallowed. And in fact, the immune sensitivities to gluten and dairy and the other main antigenic foods cause reflux, cause nausea, cause bloating, cause flatulence, cause diarrhea, cause constipation. So almost every gastrointestinal symptom is indeed susceptible to being caused by the wrong food, either because it's just a bad food choice, i.e. junk food, processed food, fast food, or there's an immune reaction, which is, again, we're all kind of hyper-immune patients today. And the thing that I say, you know, being a gastroenterologist, I'm not, like I said, I don't consider myself alternative. I think I'm just more commonsensible. And I even, one time in a lecture to a big audience on what they would call integrative medicine issues for GI, I don't call, you know, there's so many terms now for, like, alternative medicine, functional medicine, complementary medicine, integrative medicine. I call it common sense medicine because it's some very basic applied concepts. There's only one thing really in our intestinal tract, and that's food. And everything that goes on from your mouth to your backside is an exposure to food and almost nothing else. And so you can practically treat every intestinal symptom and disorder through dietary manipulation successfully.
Okay.
And again,
so,
the logic behind that is there's nothing else in there.
Okay. So did that lead you to the blueberries? Let's talk about your product, Mr. Blueberry, and you've been known as the Mr. Produce Man, and, you know, they're delicious, by the way. I had some this morning on my brand cereal.
Dr. Blueberry, by the way.
Dr. Blueberry. So,
yeah.
You know, it was very unusual. When I saw Kenny performed at the Center for Spiritual Living in Creve Coeur a few years ago, he had brought with him his organic blueberry juice, which is so, so, so delicious, and his organic freeze-dried blueberries that come in a big canister, kind of like a coffee canister, and they last forever. I mean, I sometimes will buy fresh blueberries, but you know, if you don't eat them within a couple of days, they're already getting mold, and who knows when they were picked and where they came from and how they were picked and how they were grown and what the soil conditions were. But these blueberries are amazing. So tell us how you went from medical research to growing and processing blueberries.
Okay, so what that really was, and there is a connection. So when I first started treating patients with microscopic colitis with a gluten-free diet, that was medical heresy because only celiac patients were supposed to be treated with a gluten-free diet. And at that time, that was thought to be like a torture on people. And, of course, that was the doctor's attitude, and so, therefore, that transcended to the patient a little bit. But so when I decided I needed to expand the repertoire of this dietary treatment to these patients, of course, I had no idea it was going to go as far as it ended up on a widespread scale to people with other problems and even people who just wanted to be healthy. But I decided to do it myself. And first of all, I happen to be a rheumatic patient. I've had an arthritic problem in my back since I was 14. My family has all of these kind of immune problems as well. So I decided I wouldn't just tell patients to do this, but I would try it myself. And as I started to modify my diet, and I even thought, well, you know, this might help my own GI symptoms and my own rheumatic problem, I got more and more refined in my dietary approaches. And what I discovered, by the way, as a separate thing, was as soon as you start modifying your diet, which is really modifying your nutritional intake and your brain chemistry, because brain chemistry is all dependent on diet, I started to have a spiritual awakening of sorts. Like, I really noticed how my life had started changing in spiritual ways and circumstantial ways. And at that time, I knew they were both happening. I just didn't know which was driving which. But I basically, let's just say, I ended up on a diet that you might consider as a spiritual nutrition diet, which is mostly raw food, live food, almost everything organic, everything, you know, uncooked, natural kind of thing. And so as I realized personally how expensive organic food was, both fresh produce and especially nuts and dried fruit, I decided that I would try to beat the price problem by becoming a wholesaler and a distributor to my neighbors at that time mostly. And so through my produce distribution in Dallas, I was introduced to an organic blueberry grower in the area. He's about an hour and a half outside of Dallas. And that's when I first met these amazingly sweet blueberries that he was actually a contemporary age of mine. And ironically enough, he graduated high school in the St. Louis area, even though his father was in the Air Force and moved around a lot. But anyway, so that's how I got introduced to this incredible blueberry farm and blueberry crop. And what I did for the farmer, I helped him sell his product as organic, which he grew organically, but he didn't have a lot of inroads into the organic sales market. He also didn't have a good label. He didn't have a brand. And so I branded them as Dr. Blueberry because I think the blueberry is the doctor, not me. You know, kind of made sense that I was in a medical mindset, but the blueberry itself will doctor your problem. So that's where the brand name came from. And there is just something unique about this farm, about the water, about the climate, and about Carrie. The Carrie Ware is the farmer, and the farm is called Berry Best Farm. And he's very well known for having, you know, the best tasting blueberries. And so my idea for making the products for him was that he could harvest more blueberries if he wasn't required only to sell them fresh. And so this was a way that we could create a stable product. And by the way, the juice lasts forever. It does not go bad. The freeze-dried, you know, freeze-dried food is good for, you know, decades, 50, 100 years, survival food. And I wouldn't want to say that people should eat freeze-dried blueberries over fresh if they're organic, but they are great for travel. They're great for storing. Keep them, the lid closed tight and keep it maybe out of, you know, exposure to humidity, then, you know, they do indeed stay crunchy and last for, you know, virtually ever.
What kind of stories have you heard from people that have been on the blueberry products? I'm sure you either get letters or meet them at your concerts, and then we're going to talk about your music here this second half of the program. But tell us about some of the personal stories people have shared with you about results and changing your diet.
Realized, you know, when I started into this neighborhood distribution of food, that giving people an alternative to what I consider kind of gluten-free junk food would really be better. So, for example, if you're going to remove gluten or dairy from your diet, which are the main two food antigens we recommend removing, I don't want you replacing that with soy milk and gluten-free bread. I want you to eat more fruits, vegetables, nuts, and healthy meat. And so I thought, you know, if I actually made these foods available to people at a little bit better price than retail, that maybe I can get people to choose, you know, true health food over these replacement foods. So I coined the name The Organic Alternative, which is where you buy my blueberry products and my organic food products online, theorganicalternative.com. And the alternative was an alternative to the high prices of retail stores, and they're off, you know, healthier alternative than, say, just eating gluten-free products. So I decided that this was part of my service mission, and feeding people with a healthy alternative was a good thing, and it's actually part of my recommendations for people. And we also do nutritional consultation with the food sometimes. So it's just become part of my mission. And I really think, actually, I take this as far as the famous Dr. Hippocrates of the ancient Greeks. He said, "Let food be thy medicine." And I would like to take this as far as to create, I do plan to create a health law. I call it a finer health law. And Let Food Be Thy Medicine Clinic will be one of the services there. So if people don't want to take a medication approach to their intestinal issues, they can actually take the dietary approach, because, like I said, there's only one thing in your intestinal tract, and that's food.
That's amazing. And I hope people do check out that website. Again, that's theorganicalternative.com. Have you noticed an increase with online sales? I mean, I know you do a lot of the sales on the road when you're performing, but with online products taking off in the recent years, I mean, these aren't products that people can get on Amazon, correct?
I don't sell them on Amazon. I have some resellers that are trying to that, and truthfully, I really am a lot about low price, because I object to the kind of overprice of health in general. But I have to say, I am not self-promotional at all. I do no marketing. You know, I don't even consider what I do a business. I've got no sales force. I don't go to trade shows. I just feel like, on the one hand, that I've been blessed with a lot of interesting ideas and a lot of, as we say in my Jewish heritage, chutzpah. I have a lot of nerve to just do what it is that God directs me to do. And I think I'm a bit of an inventor. So, you know, I kind of consider myself the Steve Jobs of health. But interestingly, so we mentioned the blueberry juice and the freeze-dried blueberries. The most interesting product that came out of the use of blueberries is the rest of the blueberry after you squeeze out the juice is what we call the fiber. And so when you squeeze, we do a fresh squeeze process just like you would do with wine, and then we bottle that juice, and it is unbelievably tasty and healthful. And by the way, the areas of health that this blueberry seems to be most beneficial for are your brain, your eyes, your heart, and your intestines. And then maybe overall youth, because they're very high in antioxidants and high in this anti-aging chemical called resveratrol. But after we squeeze this juice out, it just kind of came to me like we should not throw away the rest of that. We should dry it,
right,
and pulverize it. And so that's a product we call blueberry fiber. And that product, turns out, has been shown in a study in Sweden in animals to prevent colitis and even treat colitis. And I happen to notice in myself how beneficial it seemed to be for intestinal hygiene and well-being. And so it turns out I have a new product line coming I've been developing for about 10 years called Oro Intestinal Fitness Products. And it combines the health of your mouth with your intestine, because if you've got bad bacteria in your mouth and you're swallowing those all day, you can't keep your intestine that healthy. So you got to address both, number one, and then I have unique ways of doing that. But this blueberry fiber is just incredible for what it does for intestinal disorders, especially anybody with diarrhea or colitis. And taking it with probiotics actually seems to make both function even better. And you asked before about what kind of stories we get. We usually hear that at the farmers markets, and we don't hear from people as long as we're selling our juice there. But as soon as the juice ran out, people started asking for it, like, well, that was helping my arthritis, or that was helping my intestinal function. And I would think probably it would help people's brain function, you know, a little sharper. Especially at the beginning of the blueberry season, I used to notice how mentally acute I could tell that these fresh blueberry crop was affecting the brain in some kind of really positive, energetic way.
Wow. So, okay, let's make the transition to the music. So we're feeling better, we're changing our diet, we're moving more, we're eating healthy. And now we want to start dancing to the music by Kenny Fine. And there is such a nice, that Circle of Life is so catchy. I've been listening to it a lot this week. And you also have done a new CD, so we want to talk about that. I have a small clip I'm going to play here that you can talk about. It's with the Tennessee Texans. So do you want to intro a little bit about this song, and then I'll play a little clip from it?
All right. Well, yeah, you know, this there's such a story behind everything I do that I've realized that I'm not going to release music by itself anymore. I'm going to release, like, a book and the music, or an e-book
yeah.
and the music, because people want the information. But I was getting ready to play a show in Nashville, and I've been in Nashville now for 5 years promoting my music, doing shows, and having public relations agents and radio promoters there. And so we're doing a sound check. So we're just on stage with the band and we're getting ready to, you know, play the show. And I just started playing the song, just started strumming and started singing, you know, and I think, you know, these words were just coming to me like a songwriter can do. And my guitar player, who's also a solo artist himself, Brad Davis, he goes, man, we should play that. And it's like, well, I can't play it because I don't know what I don't know what I'm playing, and I don't know what the words are yet. And so ironically enough, my next show after that Nashville gig was in St. Louis. And so we played the Ballad of the Tennessee Texans. By the way, that's my band's name, the Tennessee Texans, because they come from Nashville, Memphis, and Dallas. And so we played the Ballad of the Tennessee Texans for the first time at a gig at the train wreck in Westport in 2014 when I released that album. That was actually my previous release called Son of the Heart, but we started playing the Ballad of the Tennessee Texans live then. And so the Ballad of the Tennessee Texans was the first single and video from my release of last year, which is called Brand New Road. And you can see videos for these on my website, KennyDaveAndFine.com, or on YouTube if you just search Kenny, Dave, and Fine. But so the Ballad of the Tennessee Texans is a song, I would say, written by my Cosmic Song co-writers.
All right. And we're going to play just a small clip. We are talking with Dr. Kenny Fine, and he is a musician and a physician. And we're going to hear a small selection of a new song.
Another day across in Arizona, heading for Paonia. Everything's in order, ain't got nothing in my way. I just spent 3 days in the desert chasing a mirage. My legs are growing weary, it's getting pretty scary, 'cause I suddenly encountered a platoon in camouflage. I think I'm tripping on the shoestrings of the devil, trying to get my destiny aright. Wonder if I might have better run into the night. Getting pretty clear that I can run, but cannot hide, because I'm tripping on the shoestrings of the devil.
That was a small selection, and sorry about the volume was too loud, I think, when I hit play. So tell us a little bit about your new CD and how you're getting the word out around the country with your music and being on the road.
All right. Well, so I have been an aspiring singer and musician my whole life, certainly.
Oh, Kenny, you may want to turn down your speaker volume because there's feedback playing. it's my
speaker?
End. Sorry.
Yes.
Sorry. Uh-huh. Okay, go ahead.
All right. So, I have aspired to really be a singer since I was in high school, and I played some musical instruments in grade school even. Now, back then, you either played sports or you were a musician, but you couldn't do both. You know, today kids do everything, you know, but back then it was sports or music, so I gave up the music to be an athlete. But by the end of high school, I really wanted to be a singer, and I'm in a musical family, at least from a vocal standpoint, and I like the idea that my first public voice work turned out to be as a cantor in synagogues. So just like you would hear that Aretha Franklin was singing in church before she became a gospel singer or soul singer, you know, that's kind of how I started. That it was a spiritual avenue that brought my voice to the world, and truthfully, it was a very good welcoming of who I was vocally. Now, by the way, I am an orator, I'm a speaker, I'm an educator, and I'm a singer, and I'm a doctor. So those are not different things, as it turns out. So in ancient times, you know, medicine men, shaman, they were using chants and vocalizations, and that's even true today. And so I call my voice the healing voice of Kenny David Fine, because it's not only when I'm speaking to you that I'm a doctor, but I'm singing as a doctor as well as a healer, and all of it is, you know, by God. And so basically what happens as I, you know, about at the end of the 90s when this gluten revolution started happening, and by the way, my medical center really couldn't appreciate and see the revolution that I knew was coming. Plus, I had that kind of spiritual message that I had to leave and bring it to the world. And so I left the medical post and created two websites, one called finerhealth.com and another one called enterolab.com. And so I brought medical testing directly to the public via a website. I was the first to do that, and I was really the first doctor to go full-time on the internet at finerhealth.com, which at that time you could access me for consultation, and it was mostly for medical information and education. But it was at that same time that I started recording music. I had been writing music since the early 90s, and I had about 25 songs at that time. And, you know, you'd be surprised that when you break out of, I hate to call it the box, you know, out of the box, but let's just say that when you get the courage, if you get the courage and when you get the courage to be who you can be or who God made you to be, and you follow that without concern about what others think, suddenly, you know, not being in a university, not being, you know, having to put up an image as any given type of doctor, I became much more free to be creative. I think my creativity itself got sparked. And so I started recording music back then. And interestingly, I didn't even have the courage at that point to use my last name. So I used a different name for my first two CD recordings, which is a derivative of my Hebrew name. So it was Kenny Jude. But in 2005, I released three albums. It was really 2006. A CD called What Are You Supposed to Be? An inspirational CD called For Want of Higher Ground, and a children's CD called Get on a Mission of Nutrition, which was both nutritional and overall health messaging for kids in song. And at that time, it became clear to me that my mission of music had kind of a trifold purpose. It was to entertain, to educate, and enlighten. And today, that kind of trifold purpose I call country rock-spirational, as far as the genre goes. And so my upcoming recordings are to be the first release of this country rock-spirational genre, which I hope other people follow. What I mean by that is that, you know, it's not religious, it's not Christian, it's not a new age per se, it's just a little bit of inspirational messaging within other songs that have no messaging. And I like to do both, and I can do both. So the upcoming album, it's either going to be a double album or a double release. And one of them I know is called Yes is the Word, and the other one may be called 4,000 Years of Anticipation. I haven't decided on that yet. But in the last few years, I have released, I actually have a total of 10 CDs out currently. And so I've been recording
every. Wow, I didn't know you had 10. I thought you had 6. Wow.
Yeah. So this will be my 11th and 12th, and I've been blessed by, you know, having amazing studio musicians playing on my records. One of the best musicians in Dallas who's played on my recordings, he's playing with the Eagles this very weekend at the Dodger Stadium. I have Grammy-winning, Oscar-winning producers producing my music. So, you know, there's been definitely a blessed nature of this. And you know, the music itself is not only heartwarming and friendly to the ear, but, you know, I really do believe that there's a healing element to it as well.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And it's great gifts to give to family members who might be struggling with emotional or physical health concerns. Just, you know, there has been so many studies about the positive effect of music on your physical health, and I really truly believe that, having gone through some serious injury in 1996 when I started getting out of the rat race and listening to some uplifting music, I think it did help me heal faster. And I've known people with cancer that have used music in positive ways. So he is performing. Kenny is in St. Charles today, Friday, July 14th, from 4 to 6 p.m. at Butterfly and Moon, which is at 814 South Main Street, right down by Trailhead Brewery, so down at the Boonslick end, the end towards Ameristar. So if you come off of Highway 70, just take Boonslick or 5th Street, get down to Main Street. 814 South Main Street will be there from 4 to 6. It's a free mini concert. This is kind of like a pop-up concert. Kenny was on the road to the region and contacted me, and I was happy to accommodate. We're expecting a group coming down from La Coco House. My friend Rona has some women in from all over the country, and also a few international guests are coming by to see Kenny perform, and he'll have his CDs there for sale. Kenny, have you performed internationally yet?
Oh, yeah. Ironically enough, you had mentioned someone from Switzerland. One of my first radio appearances was in Switzerland on Country Radio Switzerland. My friend David Bowley there, who's had me perform on his radio show there. And I've actually performed in Spain and in Israel. That's probably, well, and actually I think I did something in Hyde Park one time in London as well. So I guess the
answer would
be yes.
And do you have a wish list if people are, we do have a few international listeners from other countries, because since this is going out over the internet, a couple of places you'd like to go in the next 3 to 5 years?
Well, I indeed feel a draw to the international community. I think the thing that's pulling me is the health, because this gluten problem is really all over the Western world, and it's Western primarily because Western civilization has mostly been the wheat, barley, rye, and oat eaters, whereas Asians ate rice, and Africans ate millet and sorghum, and Americans ate maize, which became corn. But I do believe that I am supposed to be a physician musician on a mission, and what that really means is that I'm a information spreader. I like to consider myself kind of like a wise man of old, the guy that just kind of goes from town to town and telling people about the new information, and I like to do that both here in the U.S. and internationally. I do have an affinity for southern Spain, it seems, and I like Spain not only because of the climate and the big rock of Gibraltar down there, but that's where they grow all the food, and I'm really attracted to maybe growing, having my own orchards, and at a minimum continuing to procure food for health for people. I do see myself having a presence in Israel. I am Jewish, and that's, you know, my country of ancestry. And then Switzerland is where one of my radio songs first got played on the radio, and for some reason I received a royalty check, but for some reason, and we don't know how, my song got into Switzerland. That's how I originally got drawn over there. It was like, you know, if they're playing my music, and that's a pretty common thing. If wherever your music's getting played, you assume that people are hearing it, and you might have some fans. And so in 2010, I made my first trip over there, and I've been over there five subsequent times to start an international phase of my lab work and my health product work. And you know, I don't know if I'll go worldwide completely, but right now I guess I'd have to say it's Europe and Israel that I seem to be most attracted to.
So just a couple of final questions. I mean, you're giving so much of yourself to your audience and to your patients and to the world. What kind of toll does that take on your personal life?
Well, what I've learned is, and, you know, anybody that's really in a service mode knows that life is about giving. And I happen to be kind of a numerology buff, and my numerology is very heavily in the number 9, which is the educator, the spiritually enlightened light worker, so to speak. And while I have probably overgiven at times and crashed and had to, you know, do the Phoenix the Phoenix Rising trick. My method is primarily to keep myself in optimal health all the time, both physical health, emotional health, and spiritual health. And then what I do is I have, for many years now, lived in the country. So I haven't lived in a city since 2002. And what I find is that if I just can retreat to the country in my home in Durango, Colorado, where I also happen to have healing water, so a sulfur spring is my well, I feel like these healing waters, which have been known as the Fountain of Youth forever, and they certainly are literally healing both to my arthritic problem and spiritually cleansing. I'd have to say right now it's getting into nature and getting into my healing waters is the thing that keeps me rejuvenated to where one, if I can just do that every 6 or 8 weeks, then I, can have enough gusto to go for, that long on the road, and then I usually retreat back home for some short period of time. I try to take 2 long periods at home twice a year, usually in the end of the year and then early summer, so I'm just coming off. I only got about 4 weeks this year rather than 6, but my father's ill, and that's why I'm in St. Louis, but taking care of him. But, life is indeed about giving. In fact, in the Circle of Life song that you played, that's, years ago I heard them say the only way to keep it is to give it away. Well, that's a dictum. And I'm lucky to know that and feel that, and there's nothing wrong with living for yourself, but if you can find a way and you have the destiny to live for others, as long as you do that in enough balance where you keep yourself together enough to have something to give away, then it's, there's much more gratification in helping others and giving to people than it is receiving.
Wow, that's a great way to wrap up. I just enjoyed speaking with you. It went very quickly. And people that are listening, please share this link on Facebook and on social media. The link is good for as long as we can imagine it's good for. It can be heard and downloaded 24/7. Again, Dr. Kenny Fine will be at Butterfly Moon this afternoon from 4 to 6, and hopefully he'll be back through St. Louis again either later this year. Maybe we can organize something with more lead time for a bigger venue. But at any rate, we will close out with Circle of Life, and please check out his website, Kenny Davin, D-A-V-I-N, Fine, F-I-N-E.com. Thank you so much, Kenny. See you soon. See you in a couple hours.
Yeah. I want to thank you for having me, and I certainly want to thank all of my friends and family who have supported me over the years here in St. Louis.
Awesome. Here we go.
I help you.